This is Spectrum.
Alternative medicine, homeopathy, secret society, hypnosis, the paranormal, alternative energy, UFO abduction, the weird, the wild, and the wonderful.
With your hosts, Tom Theophanis and Scott Jordan.
Hello, good evening, and welcome to the Spectrum Radio Network on BBS Radio 2. I'm Scott Jordan, here with my co-host, Tom Theophanis, and remember, there's no such thing as too much information. Oh, my Lord, it's another week gone by already. Hey, Tom.
Yes, it has. Yeah, last week was a doozy, wasn't it?
Oh, well, Michael Tessarian, I mean, it doesn't get any better than that. Wow. And we went overtime, too. I mean, we went...
Way overtime.
Yeah, like 2 hours. But I mean, you got someone like Michael Tessarian, man. You just the questions don't stop. We're gonna have to do another show,
sure.
Cover some more stuff. Okay, this week, who do we got? Who do we have this week?
We have Peggy Kelly Davis, who is the founder of the Hypnosis Connection in Bowmanville here in Ontario. She's a certified hypnotherapist, a master hypnotist, and is a board-certified hypnotist and certified instructor through the NGH, which is the National Guild of Hypnotists in the U.S., and is also an award-winning certified instructor for 5-path and 7-path hypnosis through the Banyan Hypnosis Center down in California. She's also a director on the board of directors for the Ontario Association of Hypnotherapists for the last couple of years. And she's also the president of the Toronto East Chapter of the NGH and the vice president of the Mississauga NGH here in our area. So welcome, Kelly. Peggy, I should say.
Welcome, Peggy. That's a lot of hats you're wearing.
Yep. A little bit of experience behind me there.
Oh, I'll say. That's a lot of hats.
So, and by the way, Scott, this was my teacher.
Yeah.
This was your teacher. Ah, there you go. This was your teacher in hypnosis. So if Tom screws up, we can blame you.
Well, no. Tom's responsible for his own stuff.
There we go. That's the way to do it. That's a good answer. Okay. So do you want to start out, Tom? This is your teacher.
Yeah, you must have a question. Well, the bottom line is that you know, hypnosis has always been kind of a hidden art. You know, it's been not too well explained out there. So
there's a lot of misconceptions about it. Yeah,
a lot of misconceptions. So tonight I want to be able to do away with all those misconceptions and clarify to what hypnosis is. So maybe Peggy can give us a rundown of what hypnosis is and a little bit of its history.
Okay. So, hypnosis has been around for years, but it's been misperceived of what hypnosis really is. We as human beings go in and out of hypnosis every single day by ourselves. It's a very natural state of being for us. It simply means that we're in the subconscious part of our mind, which is the part of the mind that runs us. We kind of go back and forth between the conscious mind and the subconscious mind throughout the run of the day. We spend most of the time in our conscious mind, which is our logical, analytical mind. But it's very limited to the amount of information that the conscious mind can hold. It can only hold like 7 to 9 pieces of information at once. The subconscious mind, however, is like a video recorder. It records everything we're ever exposed to in our entire lives. So, simply put, when we are in the subconscious mind, we are in hypnosis, basically, in a nutshell. Now, okay. The misperception, the biggest misperception about hypnosis is that we go to sleep or we go unconscious or we go off to Never Never Land and come back and poof, magic has happened and we're not aware of what's happened. And that is not true.
Okay.
We, like I said, you know, we all go in and out of hypnosis every single day, and we're wide awake. We have our eyes open. We're walking around. We're talking at the deepest level of hypnosis that you can go into. You can be walking and talking.
Now, is that like, is that sort of like running on automatic? Like if you've gone to work the same way for the last 10 years.
Yes.
And you get up in the morning and you're groggy and you've got your first cup of coffee, happy, and you're driving mm-hmm. to work, and you get to work and you don't really remember the drive.
That's right.
You're sort of going there on automatic. Is that what you're talking about?
Yes, exactly. And that's a light level of hypnosis. And how that happens is, you know, as you're driving to work, you're actually thinking about something. And so your focus is actually on your thought. And as you're driving along, you're not consciously aware of what you're driving past. Now, if somebody was to swerve into you, it's like daydreaming in high school. You can still hear papers shuffling and pens clicking and the teacher talking. So if the vehicle were to swerve into us or the teacher were to call out our name, we'd react immediately. It just
right.
means that our attention is focused elsewhere. So when we focus our attention on anything, whether it's the TV or the driving or whatever it may be or a thought, it slows the brain waves down. And as that happens, we move into the subconscious mind, which is the part of the mind that runs us. And we'll just go in there for a few seconds at a time, and then we'll go back to the conscious mind, and it just keeps going back and forth like that all day long, really. But, yeah, so highway hypnosis basically means your focus is on your thought and not on what you're doing.
Yeah, and runners
but you're
experience.
You're always aware.
Runners, long-distance runners experience something where they go into sort of an altered state of consciousness. The adrenaline's going through their body.
Hello?
And just keeping them going. Hello, I'm here. Can you hear us? Can you hear us okay? Oh no, we lost her.
We did?
Okay. Wow. Well, maybe you can answer this, Tom. Now, just clarify for the audience. Now, she was your teacher. Just clarify for the audience what you've attained in your hypnosis training.
In as far as what type of degrees or
mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, similar, with the exception of I do not teach.
Okay.
I can teach self hypnosis, and that's mm-hmm. as far as I can go. But there's different courses being given in by different individuals, although there are similar, but they have different approaches to their teaching methods for the most part.
Okay. So if you were to classify your degrees, what are they classed as? What's the titles?
Well, the same thing. I'm also a master hypnotist and certified hypnotherapist.
Okay.
And 5-path and 7-path hypnosis as well.
Right. Okay. So you can answer some of the questions as well. Our guest dropped off. She's on Comcast, and Comcast has been having troubles the whole week. So I don't think it's anything conspiratorial. I think it's just a bad company. She's back. Oh, we got her back.
Yeah.
Hello.
Hi.
You disappeared and I was there.
Yeah.
Oh, that's okay. You know, it happens. It happens. We're good with that. You had a question, Tom? Oh, I was saying something. I was saying about long-distance runners. Long-distance
yes.
runners have this thing that they go through at the, you know, at some point during the run where they're just sort of running on adrenaline and they've been running a long time. They go into this altered state of consciousness. This has been reported over and over and over about how long-distance runners will go into. Is that sort of – are they slipping
yes.
into the unconscious?
Well, I call it the subconscious, you know,
okay.
which – and it depends on who you talk to, is the subconscious, the unconscious, but yes, into the part of the mind that runs you. We go on automatic pilot in there.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, they go in. And so what they're so focused on what they're doing, you see? So if you focus on anything, like I said, you'll go into the part of the mind that runs it, that runs us.
Right.
You know? And so
and
they become so focused on what they're doing that that's exactly what happens, yes.
And that includes meditation as well, the yogic
Well, meditation can do that as well. Meditation and hypnosis are basically the same thing. You use the same process to get there, except for meditation is used to clear the mind, and hypnosis is used to clear up a conflict in the mind.
Right, okay.
Mm-hmm.
What's the difference between stage hypnosis and the regular hypnosis that we're discussing here right now?
Basically, there is no difference. Stage hypnotists will do hypnosis for entertainment purposes, so they do things that are fun and, you know, for entertainment purposes. Whereas we are more in a therapeutic clinical environment, so we use the same techniques as they do to get our client to make the changes that they've come in to make. You know, except for we have people stop smoking or lose weight or stop biting their nails or what have you, whereas they have people up there dancing on stage or whatever.
Barking like dogs.
Yeah, you know, whatever.
Well, I guess what I was trying to get at is most people always ask that question is, you know, when they come in, you know, are you going to make me do something very strange?
Yeah. Well, really, you know something, we can't make you do anything that you don't want to do. I mean, if we could, just think about it, we'd have you go rob the bank and bring us back the money and forget you ever did it, you know?
Yeah. Right,
but
right.
But, you know, if you want to do something, then, of course, your mind is open to that. But if your mind is not open to it, for example, with a stage hypnotist, they'll always ask for a volunteer. So if you're not open to doing something silly or stupid up on the stage, then you're certainly not going to put your hand up or run up on the stage. They'll never pick you out of the audience because they need people who are going to be open to suggestion.
Is hypnosis safe?
Absolutely, yes. No one has ever been harmed by going into the hypnotic state, ever.
Okay.
You know, Hollywood would portray it that way sometimes, but no, it's not. It does not like that at all. And you're always aware of what happens in a hypnosis session.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, I get that.
Or you'll always remember, I should say, what happens in a hypnosis session as much as you would remember in any conversation.
Yeah, because, you know, the average person assumes that, you know, they're going to be asleep and they're not going to remember anything that
or that they're going to go under, and so under applies that they're going to go somewhere that they're not going to be aware of. You know, a lot of people will ask me that, will I remember everything or will I remember what I'm saying or things like that, and yes, you will always remember,
unless you're giving a hypnotic suggestion to forget. Right,
that's right. Yes,
right,
you're giving a suggestion for amnesia. Yes.
Okay,
which stage hypnotists do.
Which is part of the act, isn't it?
Yeah, but there's no reason for us to do that.
What problems can hypnosis help with?
Oh my goodness,
that's a long list, right?
You know, sleeping problems, study and test anxieties, fears and phobias, nail biting, motivation, sports enhancement. I mean, you name it, really, we can use hypnosis for.
Mm-hmm. Who can get hypnotized?
Anybody. Anybody that wants to be hypnotized and can follow instructions can be. It used to be thought years ago, you know, old school, that 20% of the population couldn't be, but that's not the case at all. We've discovered over the years now that anybody that wants to be hypnotized that can follow instructions, that are of normal intelligence, can be. And usually people that are, say, schizophrenic or maybe mentally challenged. And the only reason they can't be is because they can't hold a focus long enough, you know. And then people will say, well, you know, I can't hold the focus that much. That's a little bit different, you know. But if you can follow instructions, you can be hypnotized.
So, in like, for instance, in clinical hypnosis, how does that differ from what we do?
Clinical hypnosis is more working with the medical community, so medical issues.
But does it differ in any way in the approach that they take?
No, they'll still use the same techniques, you know, but they work more with medical issues.
Okay, so basically clinical hypnosis, the only difference is that they deal through a doctor or somebody with a degree mm-hmm. in that area.
Yeah. Yes.
Okay.
How does hypnosis remove bad habits?
Because the mind, the part of the mind that runs us, the subconscious mm-hmm. mind, what happens is, well, I'm not sure, there's so many different things. Really what happens is that the mind generates an emotion, and at some point in time we will do something. And when we do that something, whether it be smoking or biting our nails or whatever habit it is that we're developing, it takes our focus off the feeling that comes up. And so the mind realizes that when our focus is off that feeling that was just generated, then we feel better. So it kind of logs that in there, and then the next time the feeling comes up, the mind says, oh, the last time you did that, you felt better, so I'm going to have you do that again. Because the whole purpose of the subconscious mind is to protect us, to keep us safe, and to make us happy. So there's no logic over there, so it believes that even if you're on a diet, it'll say, have a piece of chocolate cake, if it believes it makes you feel better than the feeling that's coming up. Whether the feeling is fear or anger or sadness or guilt or whatever it may be. Once your focus is off that feeling and onto a piece of cake or onto whatever you're eating or smoking, then it'll have you do that.
Okay.
So with hypnosis, what we do is we go in and the mind actually takes us to what it's related to. And we process that out of the mind, which releases it out of the mind, and then the mind won't have you do whatever that habit is anymore because there's nothing there for you to be distracted from. Does that make any sense?
Yeah. No, that makes perfect sense.
Okay, good.
Perfect sense. That's good.
Now, does an average person able to shift from a conscious to a subconscious with control? Be able to do it themselves in this fashion?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, self-hypnosis.
Okay.
When a person does self-hypnosis, they bring themselves into the subconscious mind. And then when they bring themselves out, they'll go back to the conscious mind. But even when you're in hypnosis, the mind still will teeter back and forth out into the conscious mind. And that's why a lot of people, when they do get hypnotized, they think that they're not. It's almost like a dream state. Like you don't stay at one level all the time. You're up and down, you know, or back and forth between the conscious and subconscious mind. So when you're in the conscious mind, you're aware. When you're in the subconscious mind, you're not. For example, with the highway driving again, you know, you're focused on a thought, so you're not aware consciously of what you're driving past. You're aware of your thought. You're on your thought, right?
Yeah.
Right, exactly. I got another question in relation to that. What about, say, here's an example. You worked an 18-hour shift.
Mm-hmm.
You've got an hour and a half drive to get home. Mm-hmm. Somewhere in that drive, you don't necessarily fall asleep the way you would where your head hits the pillow and you're out like a light sort of thing.
Yes.
But you fall asleep and you have a little dream sequence. I'll tell you one that I had. I was coming home from an 18-hour shift, and I was coming into Hamilton on the highway. And just as the highway goes down and cuts off to go onto the main street there, there's the lake, the bay there,
uh-huh.
and then the guardrails. I closed my eyes just for a second, and I seen my car go across three lanes through the guardrail, up through the air, and then go into the Lake Ontario. And I was going underwater, and I just snapped to it. I'm still in my lane, and I'm reaching for my seatbelt to take my seatbelt off because I thought I was going underwater.
Mm-hmm.
And that all happened in a split second, and I just was like, okay, well, I guess I'm still on the road. I was still in my lane. I wasn't. There was no time passed. What's that experience? What's that about?
I really don't know what that would be. It seems to me like you had some kind of a future psychic experience or something.
Yeah, I don't know that.
You know,
well, don't tell me the future I'm going to be.
It almost seems like you could tell what was going to happen in the next couple of minutes, and then you snapped out of it and it didn't happen. So I don't know.
It was a weird one. That one happened last year. I was coming home from work from Toronto. I was coming home from Toronto to Hamilton, and it just was a split second. And in that split second, I went across all three lanes, through the guardrail, into the water, and snapped out of it. And when I snapped out of it, I was taking my seatbelt off in the real world. And then I clicked it back in again, and I went, okay, wait, I'm still on the highway here.
Yeah, so I don't know. Maybe there's some sort of psychic ability or something.
Actually, I had
nothing to do with hypnosis. Although, I mean, you know, in hypnosis you hallucinate, but I mean, which is the deepest level of hypnosis that you can go into. But what I mean by hallucinations, when people think about hallucinating, they think about, you know, hallucinating something drastic or something. But what I mean by that is, for example, if you're getting a cup of tea and you're looking for the sugar, and so you look over to the spot where you normally have the sugar, and as you look over for the sugar, you just happen to be in the subconscious mind, and you say to yourself, oh, no sugar. Then you go and you ask somebody where the sugar is, and they say, oh, I just put it in the cupboard. It's on the second shelf. So you go to the cupboard, you look, and you go, oh, no sugar. You go, no, there's no sugar there. And they go, yes, there is. I just put it there. So you go back and you look and you go, mm-mm, no sugar. And then all of a sudden they come along and they point to it. When they point to it, they're bringing your conscious awareness to it. And then all of a sudden you see the sugar and you go, oh, my goodness, I can't believe I was staring right at the sugar and I didn't see it. Now,
yeah,
how
that
works.
Happens all the time.
That's right. And we cannot go any deeper into hypnosis than that. And we are talking, we're walking, our eyes are open, we're listening, you see. So there is no deeper level of hypnosis than that. So how that works is when you look over for the sugar initially and you don't see it and you say to yourself, no sugar, it just so happens that you're in the subconscious mind at that split second. If the subconscious mind accepts any suggestion, no matter what it is, then it's going to do it. So when you said no sugar, it accepted that suggestion, so it's going to show you no sugar until somebody brings your conscious awareness to it. Now, that doesn't mean that every time you look at the sugar and you say no sugar that that's going to happen, just when the mind accepts the suggestion. And going back to the smoking, I mean, a person can come in and we can just give them suggestions, and if their mind accepts the suggestion, then they'll quit, which is very common. And that's why some people will quit on a first session and some people won't. Because if the mind doesn't accept the suggestion, then we need to go in and find out what the driving force is in the mind, process and release that out of the mind so that the mind will accept the suggestion for what the person wants, which is to stop smoking.
Now, could that be emotionally attached to something in their past?
Yes.
Like they were 14 years old, I'm just picking this randomly out of there. That's yeah. nothing to do with me at all. But let's just say their parents were, there was some difficulty with their parents, or maybe a loved one died. And that caused stress in their life. And because of the stress in their life, they started smoking. But they've never let go of that attachment. It was a very, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, that's exactly what can happen. That's exactly what can happen. And that's why if they would come in for a session with hypnosis and we just gave them suggestions and the mind didn't accept it, then they wouldn't quit. So we'd say to them, well, you need to come back for another session. And so what we would do is we'd find out what that feeling is that they have every time they have a cigarette. And then the mind connects that for us. So then when we bring that feeling up, the mind would bring us back to that earlier time or situation when the mind decided to smoke and we changed that, which releases it out of the mind, and then the mind doesn't have a smoke anymore.
Right,
so
because there was
there
was an event that started it off, and it's never let go of that event.
That's right, and then, you know, depending how long ago that was, there could be other events that could compound that and make it stronger.
Oh, okay, so like just layering it like bricks.
It could, yes, and that's why usually as we get older, things get worse. For example, people are afraid of water. Well, when they're kids, they're not so bad. And as they get older, or afraid of flying, you know. And then it gets really, really bad, so, because as we get older, it gets worse, because those things can compound. We can get, and there's no logical reason for it. For example, I had a lady came in with a fear of needles, and it goes back to when she was abused. So what would you think needles would have to do with abuse? Nothing, right? But it was the movement of the arm. It was the movement of the person that was abusing her reached across her and grabbed her arm. And then the nurse reached across her and grabbed her arm in the same fashion, and that triggered the mind.
It made a connection.
Yes. But logically, we wouldn't think that would have anything to do with it. I mean, she said to me, like, I've never had a bad experience with a needle. I don't know why I'm afraid of needles, you know?
So you had to root out any of the connections. Interesting, you said that about swimming. Babies are born knowing how to swim.
Yes.
They know how to swim. I mean, women are doing underwater births, right?
That's right.
You know, that's a big thing. And what happens is you can take any newborn baby in the water, they swim like a fish.
Mm-hmm.
But as the child starts developing and gets older, you can have the programming kick in. Like every time the baby, as it's a crawling, you know, or a toddler that's starting to walk, it goes near the edge of the water, the mother says no. No. So that child will associate no to water. No to water.
And so that very easily could generate that, yes.
It could very easily generate a program. So why do we have to teach our children at grade 4 or whatever how to re-swim again when they knew how to do it when they were babies?
Yeah.
The rest of their life, mommy and daddy were freaking out every time they got near water.
Yeah.
So they don't want to see when a child looks at their mother and father, who are their guardians and their teachers, if they're getting upset if you go near water, you're going to ingrain that in your body and associate water bad, right?
That's right. Well, you know, it's a learned behavior, and there's a lot of our behaviors that are learned from our parents and other authority figures in our lives. And so we can grow up building our belief system on those.
Exactly.
But hypnosis can help change that.
Well, it's like deprogramming, isn't it?
Yeah, pretty well. Anything that you want to do that you can't do, hypnosis can help with, basically.
What would you say?
Except for fly. I mean, we can't have you fly, But, I mean, anything. Like
you know what? You just ruined my whole night, because that was going to be my thing.
Oh, sorry.
Flying. I mean, I have a thing. I want to fly, but you just, there goes that idea.
Well, I mean, maybe you'll be the first.
Okay, well, that would be good. Go ahead, Tom.
So, Peggy, would it make sense to teach from a young age how to do self-hypnosis? How would that affect us?
Of kids are really already in the subconscious mind. We don't really have to put kids into hypnosis. They're not really, well, we have a critical factor, right? And that critical factor is not there when we're young. So it's only when we get enough information about any basic subject that the critical factor gets developed. And the critical factor is something that is like a filtering mechanism or a comparing mechanism. For example, if you didn't have a critical factor, I could say to you, well, the sky is blue, and you go, yeah, I know. Then I could say 2 seconds later, well, the sky is yellow, and you go, yeah, I know. Then 2 seconds later, I could say the sky is purple, and you go, yeah, I know, because there's nothing there to compare it to. But before we have that critical factor in place, we believe everything we're told. And that's why we believe in Santa Claus and, you know, the Easter Bunny and Tooth Fairy and things like that, because we don't have anything in the subconscious mind at that time to compare it to. So as we get older, we get more blocks and filters generated.
Right. And some of them are beneficial, and some of them not so much.
Exactly.
Right, okay.
And so the ones that aren't beneficial, we can change if you want them changed.
Right, you have to want this sort of thing.
Yes, that's right.
Now, tell us a little bit about the Bunyan method, which is the one that...
the five paths.
Yes.
Well, five paths is a process that we use, and it stands for five phases of advanced transformational hypnosis. And so what we do is we work with a client over usually a period of five or six sessions, and it allows us, when we follow this process, it allows us to get to the root cause of any issue that may be held at the subconscious level of the mind, which is the part of the mind that runs us, process that and release it out of the mind so the client can end up with permanent change. Because a lot of times, well, it's like anything, the weed in the garden, if you don't get the root out, it can start creeping back up. So this process allows us to actually work through, get the root out, and any attachments to it so that the client can be free of whatever's holding them back.
So you pretty much have to be able to go to further back into their lives and find out what the actual root of the problem is.
Well, we find that it normally goes before the age of five or some traumatic event in the person's life, yeah. And before the age of five, because that's usually when the critical factor is being developed. So something that we accept before the critical factor is developed can run us for the rest of our lives. For example, if, you know, we're 2 years old and we want a cookie and mom says, no, dinner's about to be ready, and then you throw a bit of a tantrum and your mother is short on patience that day and she gives you the cookie, she gives in, excuse me, then you're 40 years old and you're there throwing a tantrum with your husband and or vice versa, and then they look at you and go, oh my goodness, look how childish you are, and you think to yourself, yeah, I am, aren't I? And then you think, well, the next time I'll be more mature about it, but the next time you throw the tantrum again, you know logically that you don't want to do that, but it's just automatic, as mine says. You know, when you want to get something that you want, you throw tantrum, so that's what we do.
Right, so you're running a very old program.
That's right. But it was before the critical factor was developed, and that's why it becomes an automatic thing.
Okay.
So a lot of trauma that causes stress to a lot of folks that come to see us.
Trauma can definitely change what's in the subconscious mind, yes.
So, for example, a lot of it stays from those kind of ages.
Pardon me?
I said a lot of the traumas may be from that early age.
Well, it could be any time in our lives. For example, when you were a young boy and you had a neighbor that had a beautiful red pickup truck or a beautiful, beautiful red convertible, and you thought, wow, when I get older, I'm going to have one of those. And then when you get about 13, 14 years old, you're in a car accident with one of those. Now every time you see that vehicle, you get heart palpitations, you get nervous and hot and sweaty, like you don't want anything to do with that vehicle now. So the trauma has changed what's in the subconscious mind. And so we can go in and release that out of there so that when you see that vehicle now, you don't get nervous and upset and bothered.
Okay.
And now, is there a difference between the Bunyan method and the traditional or Ericksonian hypnosis that has been used for many years?
Well, really, the Bunyan process is exactly that. It's a process. All hypnosis, it doesn't matter, you know, is the same, really. Okay, whether it's the NGH hypnosis or the Bunyan hypnosis or the Ericksonian hypnosis. Ericksonian is like a flavor of hypnosis. But the Bunyan is structured, and it's laid out. So when you take training, what happens is in the other courses, the biggest complaint that I've had from people, and I mean, I teach the NGH curriculum myself. It's a very good curriculum. But they come out and they think that, well, I don't know what to do. Like, I know all these techniques. I've learned all these tools to use, but they don't know what to use and when to use it. It's kind of confusing for them. With the five paths, you just follow this process, and the process is like fail-proof. You just follow this process with a client, and it allows you to get to the root cause. No matter what the issue is that the person comes in for, you follow this process, and it releases whatever that block is out of the mind. And through this process, you learn advanced techniques. And so with the other courses, you'd have to take two separate trainings to get all of the training that you get with the five paths.
Now,
Plus, we do the seven path too, which is the advanced self hypnosis that wouldn't be taught either in the other trainings.
And how does that differ?
Well, the seven path self hypnosis is a body mind spirit approach, and you're given positive statements. We call them recognitions, and you say this to yourself, and it resonates with any emotion that could be blocked at the subconscious level of the mind. And then that neutralizes that emotion that's blocked so that you can have change just by doing this yourself at home. And then, of course, you can get to a point where you can start to give yourself suggestions of the changes that you'd like to have in your life, because these positive statements that we give you help release the blocks and filters that would prevent the mind from accepting the suggestions that you're going to give yourself for the change that you want. So it becomes more effective.
Can you give us any examples?
An example of these
positive suggestions you would give yourself.
Okay, so the recognitions that we give, say one is designed to resonate with any fear. So are there any blocks of fear held at the mind? By repeating this statement, it will release the fear out of the mind. And then you give yourself a positive suggestion. So then we teach you how to write a positive suggestion. For example, if you wanted to lose weight, then you'd give yourself a suggestion to lose weight. If you want to stop smoking, then you could give yourself a suggestion to stop smoking, et cetera,
okay.
Et cetera, et cetera. And so
each
statement that we give you is for a specific emotion. So if you release those blocked emotions, then the mind is more apt to accept the suggestions of the change that you want, because there won't be anything there preventing it from being accepted. Whereas in your regular basic self-hypnosis, you give yourself a positive suggestion, and through repetition, the mind will eventually accept it. So with the seven-path process, it can speed it up, because you're going to release the blocks and filters first, then give yourself the suggestion. So the mind is more apt to accept it faster.
Okay,
so we teach that along with our training as well. So in the trainings that I do, I teach the NGH training, which is the National Guild of Hypnotists, the five path and the seven path, whereas the other trainings you don't get the five path and seven path, and I'm the only instructor in Canada right now that's teaching this.
Yeah, that's for sure. Now, when you're going back in time, as we were speaking, let's say to age five or six, or whenever the impressions are occurring, can we go further back?
Yes, absolutely. You can go back into the womb. That's very common, that people go back into the womb with their mother and recall conversations or feelings, and then you can go back into a past life as well.
Okay. Now we're cooking.
Now we're getting into the heavy duty stuff.
Yeah, well,
yes.
I mean.
So how does the past life regression now play into the mainstream hypnosis, if any?
Well, if it's related to what the issue is, yes, a person can go into a past life, even if they don't believe in past lives. You know, I mean, I had a lady once that did, and she really didn't believe in past lives. And then when we were done, and she was very vivid about what she went back to. And usually there's a lot with a past life, there's emotion attached to it. So it becomes very real.
Right.
It can be scary for some people because they'll say, like, I don't know what's going on or where this is coming from, that kind of thing, you know.
Or they'll say, this sounds crazy, but I don't care.
Yeah,
I don't know
why I'm saying this, that kind of thing, too.
Yeah, or they'll, and then at the end of that statement, they'll say, but I feel better. Which is what you want to get to anyway. That's the point you want to get to is when they say, I feel
better. They'll say something like, what was that all about? That was really weird. Like, that really felt like that was me, you see.
Right, right.
The more they think about it, the more they say, like, I'm sure that was me, that kind of thing, you know. And some people can give you pretty vivid details. They can tell you, like, what they look like, the color of their hair, what they were wearing, where they were standing. You know, it's pretty amazing how some of the details that people give you.
Oh, but, yeah, but absolutely.
Mainstream hypnotherapy kind of separates itself from this.
Yes, it does.
This particular.
Yeah. A lot of people are not open to past lives, right? You know?
Yeah.
But, I guess it depends on your beliefs.
What do you think is the reasoning as to why? I mean, if we can bring somebody to the age of five or before, like you said, after the womb.
Well, maybe it's fear. I don't know. It's fear, or maybe that we've been told our whole lives that's not possible. You know, and it's like if we've been told our whole lives that the sky was purple and now I'm telling you it's blue, you're going to think, well, I don't know about that. I'll have to think about that for a bit, you know?
Yeah. Well, I mean, there's been people out there doing this for decades and decades.
Oh, that's
Dolores Cannon's been doing her work in these areas for a very, very long time and
goes
around the world lecturing people on the convoluted universe and, you know.
And Georgina Cannon there in Toronto, she's been doing it for quite some time as well.
Yeah, the only thing that really, I would say, slight it, the whole past life thing is people, you know, in the earlier days writing books about how everybody was Cleopatra or Napoleon.
Yeah.
And you got 200 Napoleons and a couple hundred Cleopatras running around the same city. where that hypnotist lived, right? You know, I mean, that really threw it. But not
I mean, you're
going to
get some people that, you know, make things up, right? So that kind of dilutes, like anything, you know.
Yeah, it dilutes the good work that's being done.
Right,
absolutely.
Exactly.
But also, I mean, if you follow that, you know, that area, you also have to somehow change, you know, possible belief systems that you may have developed, whether it was religious or otherwise.
Yes.
You now have to change your approach as to what this, you know, if this is real,
right.
Then
if you believe
that
then what? Yeah, and it's different for people that come in for specifically for a past life. They'll say, well, I want to have a past life. And people that come in and say, okay, Peggy, I'd like to have past life regression done, will say, well, I know that I've had a past life. They'll tell you things about that already. And then there's people that come in that spontaneously go into a past life. But I mean, I've had people come in for past life regression and they don't get anything at all. You know?
Yeah.
And so you could very easily see how somebody like that would say, well, that doesn't work. Nothing happened for me.
Yeah, you know? But they may be putting up some subconscious blocks.
Yeah. And fear inhibits hypnosis, you know. So if a person has a lot of fear, then that usually will stop the process. And that's why we really are very thorough when a client comes into the office. We sit down and we spend, you know, a nice bit of time with them explaining to them how the mind works and how hypnosis works and clear up any misperceptions or misunderstandings that they may have about the process so that that's not the case. And that usually helps the client go into hypnosis much more easily, much more efficiently.
Right.
I'll tell you, one of the things that I always get from guys is that, you know, when they come in for the first time, they'll say, can you teach me some ways so I can, you know, pick up girls, you know, by putting them into hypnosis?
Yeah, no. No, because you can't make somebody do anything that they don't want to do.
So
wait, hold on here a minute. You can't put the whammy on girls and well, there goes that. Okay, now you've knocked out flying.
Sorry.
But you know what's funny though? There's a lot of so-called courses, not real courses, but CDs and things that are being flown out there and on the internet that are sort of giving that impression.
Unfortunately.
And plus the media and Hollywood and everybody else gives you all these, ideas that
misunderstandings,
really
misperceptions about the process. That's right. And it kind of scares people, you know. And then I had somebody come in and tell me about a show they saw on TV where somebody was hypnotized and they were made jump off a building or something. I mean, we can't do that kind of thing, you know.
No.
No, even if we wanted to, we couldn't make a person do that, you know?
But there are positive things you can do, through...
There's a lot of positive things.
Self-determination. You can do this thing where you walk on hot coals. Why is it these guys can walk on hot coals, and if I did it, I'd burn my feet?
Yeah, it's all about the focus, right? You know? And people that walk on hot coals, they're trained to do that.
Right.
And so it's the way that you walk on them and the mindset that you're in, too. You're training the mind.
Right. And they'll train these guys all weekend long. And on the last day of the training that they're going through, that's the day they walk on the – they don't show up and then walk on the coals an hour later.
No, that's right. They go through the whole process and then they can, yes.
That's
interesting, actually.
Yeah, it is very interesting. So, that's just one of the things that you're more than your physical body. You know?
Yeah, you're using the power of your mind, the power of our subconscious mind. If we converted it into electrical current, we could light up the city of the size of Los Angeles 24 hours a day, 7 days a week for 2 years.
Yeah. Well, and there's a lot of power we're not using.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
There's no doubt that if we were able to control our mind to that degree, that we can do some amazing things out there.
And we can. It's just that nobody seems to take the time out to, right?
Well,
to do that.
I always wondered about these individuals that are doing all these psychic abilities and that sort of thing, and I'm talking about the ones that are just talking about it, but maybe the ones that have done some unusual things. Maybe part of that is because they're able to control their mind much further than the rest of it.
That could be.
I think a lot of it maybe must have to do with negative training, people saying that basically the people around you, the society you live in, the group of people that you're surrounded by, if they're telling you that this thing is not possible, then you can subconsciously accept that it's not possible.
And see,
therefore, you won't do it.
And this is exactly how self-hypnosis works. If you're told anything long enough, eventually you'll accept it, you see, whether it's good or bad.
Right.
I mean, if you tell yourself something positive, the same thing over and over every day, eventually your mind's going to accept that at some point. And just like the same thing like you said, if you're being told something negative over and over and over, eventually you will accept that.
Especially if it's an authority figure.
You're absolutely right. That is one of the ways to change what is in the subconscious mind is from a person of authority. And that's why that our teachers and our police officers and our firemen are so important in our children's lives, because they are people of authority and they can change instantaneously what goes into our children's minds. And that can run them for the rest of their lives.
And it can be good and bad. I mean, you could go to a doctor and the doctor could tell you, look, I have some news. You might want to sit down. You've got prostate cancer. It's in advanced stages.
Mm-hmm.
And this starts rolling around in their person's mind. What do you mean? I just came in for a regular checkup. What's this all about? Right? Then they go home. They start, rolling this through their mind. And, then the doctor calls them like a week later saying, oh, my God, I'm so sorry. I was mistaken. Right? You don't have it. Well, exactly. They can, through the power of their own mind, give themselves cancer because they've convinced their body they've got it.
Absolutely right, because they believe it. And a belief is held in the part of the mind that runs us, the subconscious mind. And a doctor is a person of authority. So if a doctor tells us that, we believe it, and then that is what runs us.
Yeah. Right. That's
right. We can actually generate that in the body, yes.
Yeah, actually, and they the don't mind, realize that they have the power to change it.
Whatever happens in the mind will manifest into the body, as a matter of fact. You see that quite often. I mean,
why can't we get that across, though, to the general public, to science?
I mean, it's like anything, you know. Some people will believe certain things and other people won't. I guess they will when they're ready, you know. I don't know why they won't believe that, but, I mean, quite often people come into the office and,
you know,
and I'll say things to them.
This is measurable, though.
Pardon me?
I said, this is measurable, though. I mean, you could see a lot of these effects that are occurring with people.
Yeah, absolutely. Right? Well, oh, yeah.
Well, you have an example of this. I mean, this is the easiest example I can think of, is the placebo effect.
That's
when they're
right.
doing experiments with placebos, they 50% get the test pill, 50% get the placebo, and the people in placebo will feel that they're being cured by the sugar pill, and
exactly.
In which case, what's doing the curing is their mind, not no pill.
That you're exactly right. That's a very good example of how the mind can run us. I mean, I don't know if you've studied have heard anything about Greg Braden, but he does a lot of that work.
Oh, yeah,
and,
of course, yeah.
Even if one of his videos called The Science of Miracles, on there where a lady has a tumor on her bladder, and they're telling her here that it's inoperable, and they take her over to a hospital in Beijing, China, where they teach her how to manipulate energy, and in 3 minutes, that tumor is gone. 3 minutes. And all she did was use her mind.
Yeah, they taught her a technique called Qigong. That's Qigong energy
I'm not
work.
Sure what the technique was called, but now there were three practitioners that helped her through the process for the purposes of the video, but they didn't use anything other than their mind. And so Greg Braden asked the guys, like, what were you doing when you were to release this tumor? And they said, well, we know what the vibration of a healthy bladder feels like. So they started chanting, and those chants create a specific vibration. And then they said they felt that vibration in her bladder, and then it just released the tumor. And you can watch it. If you watch the video, you can see it being done live as it's happening, and you'll see the tumor dissipate because they have a ultrasound set up there to show you. It's quite amazing. So that in itself just shows you that we do have the ability with our mind to heal. And here, she would have died.
Well, yeah, I mean, they do stuff in the East that you know, the Western practitioners don't do. There's a video out there you can watch on YouTube of a Qigong master, you know, being tested by Western scientists. And they just didn't know what to do with themselves because he was pumping energy into their body. And they were shaken like leaves, like they were. Because you know, if you get an electrode and you put an electrode on a muscle, what happens? That muscle spasms.
Yes.
But they couldn't pick up the energy on any of their instruments that he was generating, and yet he could ground himself against a wall, touch something, and make their instruments move. They didn't know what was doing it, and he could put his fingers on their body and send a jolt of chi energy through their body and make them shake, make them go into muscle spasms.
Yeah,
and they couldn't figure out what he was doing. Of course they can.
I mean, it's pretty impressive what the mind can do. And the whole thing is that if you believe it, and that's where that saying comes from, if you can believe it, you can achieve it. There's no doubt in my mind about that because the subconscious mind is what runs us and every belief is held in that part of the mind. So if you believe you can do something, then you can achieve it.
But if let's say psychotherapy right now, the clinical type hypnosis, which is no different than, you know, all these others that we've been discussing right now, why is it so that particular field is so rigid against all this other possibilities?
Well, I guess it's like anything, Tom. It's fear. It's fear because, I mean, you know, there are some hypnotists out there that are not doing such great work. Let's face it. You know, there's good and bad in everything, and they're thinking that, well, that person needs more training, and so they hear about the bad stories. It's like anything, right?
Yeah.
So they're fearful. Yeah,
but, I mean, other than the fact that medicine always wants to feed you the pills and don't want you to be able to, you know, control your own, destiny with your own.
And I mean,
ability.
We don't want to knock the medical community because it really, I mean, there's times that we really do need medications, but it's all really about creating a balance and having people make the choice for themselves what they feel is best for them and not just having one choice about something. You know? Yeah, absolutely.
Now, I want to ask another area that I wanted to sort of cover was the NLP. And how does NLP differ from hypnosis?
NLP, it was derived, neuro-linguistic programming is how the brain codes information, and it was derived from hypnosis, and they're just really quick, short little techniques that can create change in a person. You know, they're fast, they're quick.
And how about
an example of NLP?
So an example, like anchoring. So I can say to a person, when you emerge from this hypnosis session today, starting today or the next few days ahead, you'll notice the color red. Now, you may see red where you've never even seen it before. It could be small red, like a lady's nail polish, or large red. But every time your mind perceives the color red, whether you're aware of it or not, your determination, your desire to lose weight will continue growing stronger and stronger, something like that. So you're anchoring a color. You can also anchor a feeling and swap out the feeling. So you bring up a negative feeling, bring up a positive feeling, and then collapse the negative feeling. So you can do that or swap out, for example, you can swap out if you didn't want to drink pop anymore and you hated Brussels sprouts, you'd find out where the person imagines pop in their mind and then find out where they imagine Brussels sprouts and swap them out. And every time they think about pop, now they think about Brussels sprouts. So they're just quick little techniques. So reframing, things like that, or quick little NLP techniques.
And how about emotional freedom technique?
Emotional freedom technique is another name. It's called tapping, and it's like acupuncture without the needles. And so what you do is you'd say a negative statement, and when you say the negative statement, it will generate the energy block in the body, and then you would tap on the energy meridians of the body, and it releases the energy block and therefore releases whatever the negative statement was generating.
Yeah, that's right. We had George Steinfeld on, and he was talking about the tapping as well.
Well, he does a lot of that.
He does a lot of that.
Yeah,
He trained with Ram Dass.
Oh, you're kidding. Wow.
No, he absolutely, yeah.
Nice.
Yeah, you should check that out. It's on one of our previous interviews with George Steinfeld.
Okay.
He was telling us a story about Ram Dass.
You know, it'd be nice to get some training from that guy.
Oh, can you imagine? My God.
Oh, no, I can't even imagine. I know Wayne Dyer speaks highly of him.
Oh, yeah, Wayne Dyer. Yeah, Wayne Dyer is huge.
Yeah, he speaks highly of Ram Dass, too.
Yeah. You have any other questions, Tom?
Yeah. Now, also, maybe you can explain the depths of hypnosis, the levels of hypnosis.
Okay, so there's really a light level and a deep level. Beta, alpha, theta, delta are just how fast the brain waves go. So beta brain waves are going very quickly, and that's where we are right now in the waking state. And I hate to say waking state because it implies we go to sleep in hypnosis and we don't. Then the next level would be alpha. The brainwaves start to slow down a bit, and that's when we're watching TV. Somebody comes into the room, and we know they're coming into the room, and we know that they're talking to us, but we have no idea what they're saying because we're focused on the program. so we're not consciously aware of what they're saying. So that and the highway hypnosis would be alpha brainwaves. Then we have theta. The brainwaves are slowing down more. That's when we'll have analgesia. Analgesia is the blockage of pain in the body. Anesthesia is the blockage of all sensations. We've all experienced analgesia because how many times in our lifetime have we gotten ready to go to bed or to get a bath or a shower? We look down at our arms or legs or somewhere and we'll see a big bruise or a big cut or scratch and we'll go, oh my goodness, I wonder what I was doing or wonder how I got that. I have no clue how I got that cut or bruise. So whatever we were doing throughout the run of the day, we were so focused on it that we actually cut or bruised ourselves and we weren't consciously aware of it. And so that is the deep level of hypnosis. And now the deepest level is when we negatively or positively hallucinate. And the negative hallucination was the example I gave you about the sugar dish. Then when the brainwaves slow down further than that, it's delta. And then we've gone to sleep. So every night we go to bed and we go to sleep, we go through hypnosis. And that's why a lot of times if you go to a Holiday Inn somewhere where they have a big group of people to do hypnosis, you'll find a lot of people will go to sleep. Because a hypnotist can't, you know, be aware of what every single person in the room is doing. And so because we go through hypnosis every night to go to sleep, it's very common for people to go to sleep. But when you're in a one-on-one situation, it's a little bit different. We know where you are. We can monitor you so that you don't go to sleep.
Mm-hmm. Right. And what about dreams? Where do dreams fall into that?
Well, dreams would be in your sleeping state.
That'd be in delta?
Hypnosis. Your past hypnosis at that point. Yeah.
Okay, what about conscious dreaming?
Conscious dreaming,
or lucid.
That would be daydreaming.
Another word for that is lucid dreaming.
Lucid dreaming?
Yeah.
I don't know. I would imagine that is in the dream state as well.
Okay.
You know. I don't think that's in the hypnosis level, alpha or theta. Pardon me?
One other area that is starting to become very popular in the hypnosis field is sports hypnosis.
Yes.
Give us a little bit about that, because I understand you had a sports individual.
Oh, yes, a sports workshop. I had, Corey McCusker. She came in and did a workshop. She works with professional athletes. And so it's having people focus, right? They're focused on, so if it's golf, you know, the person wants to have the perfect golf swing, right? Or the soccer player wants to be able to be more efficient at kicking or more accurate. Or the skater or the hockey player. It doesn't matter what the sport is. It's really just teaching a person how to use the power of their mind to do what they want to do, basically. Doesn't matter what the sport is, you just need to find out what is it they want to do, what is it that they're not doing, and then just release whatever is causing the mind to do what they don't want to do and reinforce what it is that they want. And it makes them more effective.
So can somebody become a Tiger Woods if he was like me instead of...
they say that the professional athletes, my understanding of it is that some of them are just born that way. But
mm-hmm. Talent has to be there as well.
Yes,
right.
That's right.
I agree.
But so there is a certain percentage of people that just have that natural talent. But still, I mean, even with Tiger Woods, he does hypnosis all the time. He learned hypnosis as a child,
right.
And that's what made him so good. Even
right.
though he may have had the natural talent as well.
Yeah, they've right. also tested. They've also tested Formula drivers and sports figures, and what they would have them do is they would have them, in the case of the sports drivers, they would have them do the course in their mind before they got in the car.
Absolutely,
so they would sit
yeah.
and go into a meditative state. They would do the entire course. In their head, every turn, every straightaway,
yeah.
every move, every shift, and then they would come out of that deep state of meditation and then go do the race. And they seen a marked difference in their performance levels.
Exactly. Because what the mind expects to experience, it tends to experience. So if you expect you're going to do well, you will. If you expect you're going to do bad, you will. So we need to train the mind to do what you want it to do. And that is expect to do well. So if you're being pessimistic or anxious about not doing well, we need to find out why the mind is creating that or generating that and release it out of there. And then, yes, have it go through the process of, yes, doing well. And that is one way to confirm that, is by having them just doing a visualization or in a nice level of hypnosis.
So also another area right now is birthing as well, isn't it?
Oh, yeah, that's huge, because women really don't want to do medications anymore when they're having their babies. And they want to have babies that are not being born in stress or trauma. And so teaching women how to use their mind to have a gentle childbirth is very effective. Absolutely.
So I just want to make sure that you know, the public understands that, you know, pain can be controlled with hypnosis.
Oh, we deal with all kinds of pains. We deal with broken bone pain. We deal with childbirth pain. We deal with cancer pains. We deal with all kinds of pains, migraine, headache pains, shingles, people that have shingles, that kind of pain, all kinds of pain, yes.
And I'm kind of an example. When I had my heart attack around that same period of time when I was with you there.
Ah.
So. Oh, were you using this?
Well, yeah. I used the technique at that time.
After your heart attack?
To help get rid of not just, fears and things that you have right after, but also pains that, you have in the beginning.
So there you go. I mean, it's amazing what you can do with hypnosis. It really and truly is.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's just simply learning how to use the power of your mind is what it is.
You want to give us a little bit in as far as how often you have the courses and where they're being taught?
I usually teach it 3 or 4 times a year. I'm actually right in the middle of teaching a class right now. My next class is in July. And I usually teach it over 3 weekends, but it's 10 days all total for the training. So, and I'll do demonstrations in class. We practice every day. Of course, we do 7-path every day. You see videos of sessions being done and things like that. And so, by the time you come out of there, you're pretty efficient at putting somebody in and out of hypnosis. Oh. So, usually 3 or 4 times a year. And I'm in Bowmanville, and you can go on my website or you can just simply email me.
Yeah.
What's your website address?
It's thehypnosisconnection.ca.
Okay. And we'll have it on our website
We already have it on our website.
Okay, and put my email address on there, too, if people want to contact me that way.
Also, maybe give out a phone number if anybody wants to.
Okay, so that's 905-623-0092.
Okay. Well, yeah. I want to thank you very much for coming on
and
explaining
everything. Well, thank you very much for inviting me. I really appreciate it.
And I enjoyed it. I hope to see you guys soon down there, because I want to come out to the next seminar.
Okay, great. I look forward to seeing you.
Thanks again, Peggy.
Okay, bye for now.
Take care. Bye-bye. We'll see everybody next time.